And I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. It was just crazy. We looked at each other like, what?
Are we really ready for this moment? Like, we were so excited and like we knew it was gonna happen. But then in that moment of like, holy cow, like this is actually happening.
I took that onesie and I made a cute little sign that said, hi, daddy, I can't wait to meet you. And I put the positive test and I laid it all out on our dining room table. And then I sat for like 2 hours.
You've landed on the From Bumps to Birth podcast. I'm your host, Ricky Hamley. As a crazy mom of six and a diehard birth geek, I created this space for parents to come and share their unique journeys to parenthood. Whether it's been smooth sailing or bumps along the way, there's no journey alike. So help me in honoring these stories and sit back, relax, and let your inner birth geek indulge.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have Alex Wallingford with us, and she is going to be sharing her story with us. I want to give a brief little heads up. Some of the nature in her story can be a little bit triggering. So if you're, there are some traumatic incidences. So if you are not in the right spot for that right now, I recommend you just skipping over this one and coming back when you're in a better place. But without further ado, Alex, thank you so much for coming on today. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. As she said, my name's Alex. I've got my husband, Steven. We've been married for just over 7 years, celebrated our 7-year anniversary in September. And in January of this year, of the crazy year of 2020, we had our sweet little Mason, who's now 9 months old and crazy and active. He's the most busiest little boy that I've ever seen, and it keeps me on my toes, and it's just quite an adventure. And I just know that it's going to be even more of an adventure as we go through life. So,
well, I'll just go ahead and let you start wherever you see fit. Okay.
I guess I'll just start really briefly about before we got pregnant, because it was kind of an adventure. We obviously didn't have our baby until, you know, we'd been married for 6 years. And so the reason why that is because we found out very shortly after getting married that I had a condition called vaginismus, which is basically like an involuntary muscle contraction of your vaginal canal. And that made sex like impossible, basically. So we struggled with that for a long time. And then it was not till a few years later that I even knew what to do for it. So I started going to a pelvic floor physical therapist, and she worked on the muscles and made it so that I was finally able to wear a tampon for the first time in my life. I was like 25 years old, finally able to like wear a tampon. And that was incredible. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that it could be this awesome. So like, you know, my whole high school and everything, it was just too painful to even use one. And so there was like no way that I was gonna be able to have a baby. And then to even include with that, I was always terrified of childbirth. I know that that terrifies like every woman. Like that's just a very normal thing. Like it's just so primal and scary, especially if you've never done it before. And so I was just, the thing was though, is I was always afraid that I was going to die giving birth. So when this happened to me, I'm like, what in the world? I guess I conquered my fear. So yeah, but then when I got pregnant, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even like really feel pregnant. Is this how it's supposed to be? Like I knew something was off, but I didn't know that it was pregnancy until like a test really confirmed it, because I've always had the most irregular periods known to man. Like they just were so irregular that I really had no way to track it. Like I knew when it was too late, but at the same time, it would take a long time for me to know that it was too late. So I just never really had any nausea during pregnancy. I didn't throw up at all like the whole time. So I was counting myself pretty lucky. So it was just a, you know, really perfect pregnancy. And the only thing that ever got a little concerning was towards the end is, you know, he was getting bigger. My doctor was like, his head is real big. I'm like, oh, great. How am I supposed to get that out? I'm like, what? Oh, my gosh. So it just made me so nervous. But she's like, oh, that's okay. A lot of babies are like this. So it eased my fears a little bit. But everything, you know, went smooth. And then at 38 weeks, we went in. And my doctor, she did urine testing every single appointment. And then we got to see the baby every single appointment too, which was nice. So at 38 weeks, when I went for my just weekly visit, my test came back, or my urine test came back for protein, and I had high blood pressure. So, and it was just like an all of a sudden thing. So they're like, all right, well, we need to order some more urine testing and check your blood pressure more frequently and everything. So I think this is probably like January 16th at this point, of this year. And so January 16th, they said that I most likely had preeclampsia, but they wanted to do all the tests to confirm. And so they gave me this huge orange collection tank, is what I guess I'll call it, for collecting my urine for 24 hours. And that was so weird. So I brought it into the hospital, you know, 24 hours later after, you know, doing that. And then that was like the 18th of January at that point. And then I was going to bed that night, and I just felt like really uneasy, and just like my heart was almost like racing, and I was just kind of warding it off as like anxiety, like, oh man, it's probably getting really close, and you know, time is really at a crunch here, and I didn't feel ready at all, and I felt that way my whole pregnancy. I could have honestly probably waited till 50 weeks before. I was probably begging him to get out, because I was just like so scared to go through the childbirth thing. So I wasn't ever really to a point where I was begging for it to end. But so there was that one night on, I think it really was the 18th. I don't know the exact date, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was, where I was going to bed and my blood pressure felt really high. So then my sister-in-law, she just lives 10 minutes away. She has like one of those at-home blood pressure cuffs. And I was like, hey, can you bring that over? And it was like 11:30 at night. And so she's like, yeah, sure, I'll be right over. And it was showing high. And so my husband was at work that night because he works graves. So I called him. And I was like, hey, I think we need to go to the hospital. Like, my blood pressure is high and I'm too nervous to go to sleep, because I know that when you're having preeclampsia, it can go into eclampsia really quick and you can get seizures, and it's just not a good situation. So we went to the hospital. They did a non-stress test on me, and I was starting to have some contractions. I couldn't feel them, but I was starting to have them. And so they decided to keep me at 3 a.m., and then that's when they started giving me Cytotec. It's just like a little white pill that dissolves in your cheek. And then I don't remember exactly what time they started giving me Pitocin, but it was later in the day. But they were giving us food, and it was incredible hospital food. Like, it was so good. I think they gave me French toast in the morning, and we had some lunch and dinner, and they gave me food, so I was happy. So then, yeah, it was great. I remember that for sure. And my labor wasn't too bad. Like, I could definitely start feeling it once they gave me Pitocin, and it was just, it wasn't too bad. I was able to stay calm and everything. And so, then, you know, once they gave me the Pitocin, however, that's when I started to feel it. And so, I just wanted to say that, like, my water breaking, that was the weirdest feeling that I've ever had. It was like the rush when you have your period and you stand up times like 100.
So definitely, I was like,
what is that? And so, yeah, and it happened at the end of a contraction. So, like, as soon as it was over, it was like a gush. And so, once we got that all cleaned up, I got back into the hospital bed and I started really feeling the contractions. But I had learned by watching YouTube videos that if you like make like these throaty sounds that are like, I don't want to say it's like a moan, but it kind of is. Like, it's like, you know, but you do that through the whole contraction. That really helped me, like, focus on something, and it just made it a lot easier. I think the YouTube video that I was watching was by this girl named Bridget Taylor. I think she's a doula in San Diego or whatever. But yeah, she was giving tips on how to do that. So that really helped through labor until I got the epidural. And so that was another thing that I was like so nervous for, because I don't like needles, which is like a very common like thing. But so I got the epidural and I barely noticed it. Like, it really wasn't even that bad. I didn't like being hunched over during contractions though.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. That was uncomfortable. That was way more uncomfortable than the epidural. And so I don't know if it was, I think they were giving me magnesium, and I don't know if that was, if that's just like a common thing they give you, or if it was because of my preeclampsia, I don't know, but they were giving me that and it was making me feel, and I don't know for sure, but I think that was what was making me feel very like calm, and I started getting really tired, and I don't know, I just was feeling so sleepy. But and I don't even remember what time they told me that I could start pushing, but it was probably like 2 a.m. the next day, which at this point would be the 20th of January. So, but yeah, I was so sleepy, and I ended up pushing for 5 hours.
Oh, and
to me, I didn't, like, time honestly was at a standstill. I had no concept of time during all of that. I don't know if that's just like a common like biological thing. I'm convinced that it is, because I didn't realize that it had been that long. But we were using like the vacuum assistance, the suction, and then that still wasn't helping, and Mason was just stuck. And so then she's like, I think if we do an episiotomy, that will help. So then we did that, and that still wasn't helping. So then I finally was like, okay, he's not coming out. I'm so tired. These two other things have not helped. I think we should do the C-section. So then they got the doctor there to do the C-section, because I don't believe it was my actual doctor. It was someone else that actually does them. And then it was just the weirdest feeling. They were like, it felt like they were like bouncing on my stomach, but they were like moving all my tissues. And so that was so weird feeling. I do remember I dry heaved at one point, just probably because they were tossing everything around.
Mm-hmm.
The anesthesiologist was like, you might feel a little sick and you might throw up. I'm like, oh, great. And then I dry heaved and I was fine though. But then I heard Mason's cry. And this is kind of a blank spot, because I just remember hearing Mason's cry and then like, they immediately brought him to me, but I don't think that's the case, because I was really sleepy, so I might have fallen asleep. But he was born and he had a low Apgar score of 2, which is that's not a good score. So no. I think they are doing some respiratory help of some kind. I don't know, because his next score, because I know they do 2, his next one a few minutes later was like 7, I think. And so I think after that is when I got to see Mason, because I don't know, because he looked like he could breathe when I saw him. So I got to see him for a few seconds and kiss him on his forehead, and I got to hold his little hand, and I was just like, he kind of looks like my grandpa. And then I kind of like fell asleep as I was getting stitched up. Steven and Mason left for the nursery, and I felt tugging, but I was so tired, so I just fell asleep. So Mason was born at 7:41 a.m. at 7 pounds and 1 ounce, and so on January 20th. And after I was stitched up, they moved me to the recovery room, which is where Stephen and Mason were waiting for me. However, this is where the drama starts to go down. Not that the episiotomy and suction were already enough drama. This is where it really starts to go down. And I have a slight fuzzy memory of being in the recovery room with Stephen and Mason, but the best way I can describe it was, it was like a dream sequence from a movie, you know, where it's like really blurry and there's vignetting around the edges, and I guess that was probably because my blood pressure was dropping, and so they were like figuring out that I was internally bleeding. So then they had to go and open me back up in that same area. And they were doing like an exploratory laparotomy to figure out what was going on. So they open me up and they find that my uterus is full of clots. And it's just not doing what it's supposed to do to actually stop bleeding. It's bleeding and it's clotting, but not in the right way. Does that make sense? Like, it's just, it's not clotting in the correct, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's what everyone says. So I guess they were probably beginning transfusions and, you know, I'm bleeding out just as fast as they're giving me blood. But it was a lot of trauma for my small hospital. So they decided to lifelight me to Utah Valley Hospital in Provo, Utah. And that's an hour drive away, you know, from our house. So, you know, my mother-in-law, Steven, my mom, they're all traveling up to Utah Valley, and I'm on the lifelight. And then they decide to also lifelight Mason because of, you know, how he was when he was born with his respiratory issues and the birth trauma and to be near me. So he got lifelighted as well on his own lifelight, we were all so lucky to have that happen though, because I think right after Mason arrived is when it started like heavy snowing. I was out, that's just what everyone told me. So, and then there was some sort of surgery that I was kind of awake for, and that was weird. I don't know if it was during the laparotomy or what, but I could hear people talking and I could tell that they were working on me. I knew I was in a surgery, but the thing was that everything was black. I don't know if they like cover your eyes during surgeries or whatever, but everything was black. And I felt completely numb. And usually you hear of like this kind of being like an out of body situation where you can like see people working on you, but no, I was fully in my body. I knew that I would wake up at some point and get some answers. However, I didn't, you know, realize the severity of what was going on. So I was fully in my body and I knew that I would wake up and get to ask some questions, but we'll get to that later. anyway, I was aware that I had just had a baby during this little awake moment. I didn't know why I was in surgery. But I just remember them hearing and talking about blood transfusions. So I was trying to like, you know, like when you're completely, I don't know how to describe it, but like if you're completely numb, it's like you're trying to will a limb to like move so that you can like notify them somehow that you're awake. Cause I couldn't talk either. Cause I think they like put something down your throat in order to keep the breathing going. But so I couldn't talk. So I'm like, how do I like, I was thinking in my head, how do I move my leg or my arm so that they know that I'm not fully asleep? Like 5 seconds later, whatever, I was out again. So something must have happened. Maybe my blood pressure was going higher and they're like, oh, I think she's kind of awake. So at least I didn't feel anything. But yeah, the whole Mason being lifelighted to breathing difficulties or whatever it was, it's kind of a blank spot for me in our story because I obviously was out. So I don't really know the full details on that. And I feel like no matter how many times the people around me tell me that, I don't really have a connection to that part. So it's hard to remember it because, you know, I wasn't conscious. So then my family and everyone, they arrive at the hospital and the doctors inform them that they had to perform an emergency hysterectomy on me. Because I wasn't stopping any bleeding and it was just necessary to save my life. So, you know, my first child, I can't have more biological kids unless we, you know, decide to do the expensive route of gestational carrier, which is basically like a surrogate. However, it's, you know, my egg and my husband's sperm, but in a surrogate. So, but that's really expensive. We can always adopt though. But anyway, my mom says, like she said, if her recollection is correct, she said that I was given 47 units of blood products that day, which I've heard is crazy. Like 2 persons worth of blood, apparently. That's what my uncle said. I think that's what he said. And he's a nurse. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So obviously, because of my situation, they're like, she's in ICU. Like, there's no way she's okay to not be in ICU. So I'm in ICU. And I don't know what time of day this was, but then I code blue. So let's just keep amping this up. I code blue.
Oh,
and I'm going into cardiac arrest. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And then I think my husband said, because my husband was in the room when this was happening. I told him that he needs to get therapy for it, but he says he's fine. I don't know. I really think he needs to talk to someone about this. Because I'm coding blue in front of my husband. He's not leaving the room because he doesn't want to leave me, you know. So anyway, an ICU doctor walks in or figures out that the reason why I'm coding is because of hypocalcemia, which is when there's too little calcium in the blood. So they were able to like hook me up to something that corrected that. And so now, because of the whole cardiac arrest, CPR, everything, now I'm on a ventilator.
Oh my.
I'm laughing because that's the only way that I can, you know, I'm laughing because I look back at it and I'm like, this is a crazy situation. So
it's like true definition of like roller coaster ride.
Yeah. And laughing about it makes me just be able to be more positive about the whole situation. So I'm not like, you know.
Well, and it's your story too, and I don't think anybody's gonna judge you on that.
Well,
you are totally able to cope however you feel.
Like the nervous laughter type for sure. So but
yeah,
I'm more laughing that it's just the roller coaster, like you said. So I think it's around 9 or 10 p.m. that I finally woke up for real. Like I was awake. I was conscious, but everyone was so worried at that point when I was, before I'd woken up, that I was I brain dead now? Like, we don't know her brain function after all of the events of today. We don't know what's going on with her mental capacity. So I wake up and I can't talk, obviously, because I've got a huge tube down my throat. And I remember realizing, oh my gosh, like, what is this? Like, it almost feels a little suffocating at first because it's like you're taking your first breath after coming up for air from, you know, having a breath holding contest in the water. It's kind of what it felt like. So I'm like, except for I couldn't breathe or take that exhale.
Right.
So that was a little weird to start dealing with for the next 12 hours or however long it was. But I was kind of motioning with my hand and like I had like my one hand out and the other hand like I was like writing on a piece of paper and I was trying to do like this motion like I'm trying to write so I can ask what the heck just happened. Like, how did I end up here? I just had a baby. Like, I just thought I was going to be waking up from a really nice nap. So I'm motioning for a pen and paper. And so I start writing, but I'm still so swollen from all the fluids from the preeclampsia that I think my eyes were barely open because of how swollen I was. Oh my gosh, if this was a visual podcast, I'd show a picture because it looked like I was, you know, obviously I was pumped full of gas for the surgery, for the hysterectomy, but the preeclampsia and all of it, the fluids that they were pumping through me, I'm wondering, I'm a small girl. I'm 5'2", you know, and like 120 pounds. So I must have been, I'm trying to guess. I was probably like 200-ish pounds, probably with all the fluid. I don't know for sure, but it was a lot. So, but you know, it was a lot. So I think that fluid retention was making it hard for me to see, and plus my eyes were really trying to focus on what was going on, and so I was trying to write and it looked like a made-up language. It didn't look like English at all. so because the doctors were concerned about my mental capacity and my brain function, that was kind of concerning for everyone. So And I could tell they couldn't read what I was writing. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I started doing a texting motion with my fingers, like, you know, like a texting motion with my hands. And then my mother-in-law is like, I think she wants her phone. Give her her phone. And so I try and I'm like trying to like, with my really blurry vision, like find the notes app on my phone. And I'm able to somehow find letters and text. They're like, oh, she's got the texting reflex. She must be okay. So I'm like texting, asking questions. And then my mom had to break the news to me that, you know, I was infertile now. And so, yeah, this is my first child. And so she was really nervous to tell me that. And she was like tearing up. And I was like, I remember texting to her. I'm like, it's okay, mom. Like, you know that I was always afraid to have kids. And I've always thought that maybe I would adopt one day. And so this is kind of just like a confirmation thing that, yes, we probably will. So I was more fine with it than everyone else, I think. But it's I'm sure there'll come a time where I'm like really upset about it. Like as time has gone on, I'm like, dang it. Really wish that we could have our own biological kids in a non-expensive way. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, having kids regardless is expensive, but like doing it the gestational carrier way, just because you pay for like the woman, the surrogate's IVF and like all the, yeah, it's more expensive than just a traditional surrogate. So, because I have to like do like all the hormones to myself to retrieve the egg, and then they, you know, I have to get sperm from my husband, and then they have to combine it, and then they have to IVF to the surrogate. Yeah, it's just expensive, and then all the doctor fees and all that. So anyway, let's see where I am in my notes. So so the next morning they got to remove my ventilator. They're like, she's breathing great without that. I still had the little nasal cannula oxygen thing because I still had lower blood oxygen. I don't know why I wouldn't after all that, obviously I would. So
I was gonna say you kind of were put through the ringer. Yes, so.
I was very much so. And so they took my ventilator out. I remember texting to the doctor, I'm like, will it hurt? He's like, it'll just be uncomfortable. And so they were telling me to, like, I think they did it when I was exhaling or something, but oh my gosh, it didn't hurt, but it was so uncomfortable. The best way I can describe it was it felt like a really thick smoothie straw, like the kind they give you when you have a smoothie. But it felt like that with a balloon on the end that was being pulled from my lungs and throat. And then,
oh gosh, it definitely sounds uncomfortable.
And then they're like, you'll probably have a sore throat for a while. You should just rest your voice. And I'm like, no, I have so many questions. What's going on? They're like, yeah, you're fine. I'm like, are you kidding me? First of all, I haven't been able to figure out really what's been going on. So now that I can ask more than like quick little questions on my phone, like what is going on? I'm going to be asking questions. I'm not going to be resting my voice. So it was a little raspy for a while. For a few days. And then because of the CPR, it kind of hurt to breathe in because I think they bruised my ribs. By some miracle, my ribs didn't break. I don't know. Yeah, because, you know, they tell you that you should be putting enough pressure on someone's ribs to break their ribs. Yeah, my ribs didn't break.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how they didn't break, but they were definitely sore for a couple weeks. So whenever I would take a deep breath, like it just was uncomfortable. But then I don't know if it was the next day or later in that day, a lactation consultant, she came into my ICU room and she's like, whoa, you've been through so much. And then, you know, because she has to for her job, she's like, will you be breastfeeding? And I wasn't sure, but from everything that I just went through, and I knew that it was like a super intense process for your body to like make milk, and it requires a ton of blood flow to be able to do that, and I just did not feel comfortable with the state that my body was just in to even like entertain the idea of breastfeeding. I was just like, I don't think my body can handle that right now. Like I was still pretty weak, and I had just lost like all my blood and had it put back, someone else's put back into me. So,
right. Yeah, yeah, it like, makes
there's
sense,
no way.
Sure.
And then I was just like thinking, well, I'm in a lot of pain and I will be in a lot of pain for some time to come. I don't want to feel that pressure to be the one that's responsible fully to feed my child. So we did formula, thank goodness for formula. And I was totally fine with it. I know that there's like a whole lot of people that aren't, but like I was a formula fed baby. I've always been super healthy. Haven't had any really intense health issues. I mean, until now, but, but right. So I was totally fine with it. And my husband was able to help feed Mason. So it was great. And so, and Steven took on everything. He took on like the diaper changes and the feedings until I could even handle holding Mason on my own. Cause Steven and I were talking about it when we were asked if we were going to breastfeed. And I was like, well, Steven would have to literally hold Mason on me the whole time because it was just so painful to even like have anything on that area. Cause I just had the C-section and the loss of my uterus. So yeah, that's going to be painful my abdomen area. And then I had some physical therapists come and they helped me walk the ICU hall. That was so painful. I hadn't, you know, really sat up or walked since right before my labor had started. So it'd been a while. And I just remember standing up for the first time and pee went everywhere. Because I don't know what it was. Yeah. I don't know if like my pelvic floor muscles kind of messed with my catheter. Because once I actually was able to put weight on, it just... Oh, man. I think that's probably what it was. Because it just kind of went everywhere. And it was really weird. But nurses are amazing. And I will never not say that nowadays. But so they cleaned that all up. And they cleaned me up. And But yeah, I was able to eat yogurt. But they had me on an all-liquid diet. And I'm not that much of a liquid person. I like water. But that's usually the only liquid that I like. So I was just basically eating broth, and that's not my favorite part of any soup. I like all the chunky stuff in a soup. So I was basically eating like the worst part of soup for me. So I think the next day after that is when I finally was good to be out of the ICU. They're like, we did not expect you to be ready to be moved out of ICU. You are recovering great. And so I'm like, oh, that's so great. So they moved me to the L&D floor. But before that, they had the PTs walk me again up the ICU hall, which this was the next day. And so my nurse, she gave me some pain meds. She gave me some Dilaudid through my IV. And oh my gosh, that wired me up. I remember that hitting. And because it's right, you know, through your IV and it hits your blood, it's like an instant thing. So I just remember like, oh my gosh, I feel so wired up. I don't like this. It made me all jittery and weird. And so I was like, so when you give me medicine again, I just don't want it that strong because I don't think I need it that strong. And for me, usually I avoid taking pain meds at all costs unless I really need it. So I've only really ever needed an ibuprofen to get through any pain that I've had. So those were real strong for me. I think those are like opiates. I'm not sure, but it was really strong. I think it was too strong for my body.
Yeah.
But so yeah, when they moved me to L&D, I had this big corner room with windows on a full wall and then half of another wall. And so that evening they finally let me see Mason because they don't want a NICU baby to go to the actual ICU, adult ICU. So I wasn't able to see him. Steven was able to visit Mason during all that time, though. So when I was in L&D, they were finally able to let me see him, and I got to hold him, and that's when I knew that my decision to not breastfeed was right, because it was so painful. I could barely do it. I think I could only hold him for, like, 3 minutes before I'm like, okay, this hurts. And it made me feel so bad, because I'm like, I want to hold him and get to know my son because right now he feels like a full stranger because I hadn't seen him since right after he was born, like 3 days prior. So that's a lot of time to go, and I didn't get right. skin to skin or anything like that because of my situation. So I did feel some mom guilt over it, but I knew at the same time that it would get better because I would get better. So I was kind of, go ahead.
Well, and I bet you the 3 minutes that he did have with you, I bet you he was just like, oh, my mama. You know, I bet you I know that you said that you felt guilt, but I know that he probably treasured those minutes.
And I'm a spiraler. I start spiraling with my thoughts, but I knew that at the same time, like, I always had like the logical side of me, like, no, look at your situation. You're totally fine. You will get to know him. You will love him like nothing else once you're better. So,
yes, totally. And you have to take care of yourself to like take care of another human being. So
like my only thought the whole time we were there was just get better, get better, get better, get better. Like, so, So yeah, Stephen was balancing his time between me in the ICU, then moving to L&D, and Mason in the NICU. So he didn't leave the hospital at all. So this whole time. And so, and he was staying in my room with me in the L&D room on those couches, that pulls out into a bed or whatever. He slept on that the whole time. And so within the next day or two, they released Mason from the NICU to Steven, but they couldn't release him to me because I was still a patient. And because Steven was staying with me in my hospital room, it was the three of us all in that room, even though Mason was technically only released to Steven. So, like I said before, Steven handled everything and he didn't leave at all to go home because our home was an hour away and, you know, that's 1 hour there, 1 hour back. So that's just too long for Steven. And I felt really grateful that he didn't leave me alone in this crazy situation, even for a minute, other than when he went to go see Mason. So he handled literally everything. Occasionally through the next few days, I would try and like help Steven in some way. So he had to like teach me how to like change Mason's diapers and how to feed Mason, but I really wasn't doing much because it hurt to stand up for a long time because that takes core muscles, which I had zero of. He had to basically teach me all that, which was just so interesting because usually it's the woman teaching the husband how to do all that, but I never really had a ton of experience with changing diapers or feeding a baby or anything because I was just not exposed to babies that much growing up. So, after a few days, I was strong enough to take walks without the physical therapists, but I had to use one of the hospital wheelchairs, which they're really pretty tall. They're not like the standard wheelchair. They were pretty tall. And I had to use that as a walker around the L&D floor. So we would go on walks. And as I got stronger, I was able to do a full circle around the whole floor. At least in that little L&D section I was able to do. And that was making me feel good because I was actually seeing progress. And that, okay, I was a little bit stronger than I was the first time I ever did this. So women that are, you know, coming off of a C-section or something, is walking is not underrated. It definitely helps you. You just go as slow as you need to. Like, I was going so slow, but I'm surprised how well that helped me recover. Like, that was one of the things I feel like was crucial, were walks.
Oh yeah.
So it was definitely worth it, even though sometimes it was a little painful. Very uncomfortable most of the time, but it got better within the next few weeks. So the day that they took out my catheter, this is so TMI, but I call myself a TMI queen. Like, it doesn't bother me. So, the day they took out my catheter, I was peeing pretty much every time I stood up. It was so involuntary and I got so frustrated with it because I'd have to tell the nurse, oh, I stood up and I peed. So they'd come up and they'd clean me, they'd give me a new hospital gown and clean everything. But then I started setting a 2-hour timer on my phone so that I could retrain my bladder. So day and night, whether it was 3 a.m. or 5 p.m., I would get up and go to the bathroom so that I wouldn't have to stand up and have that situation as dramatic. It was still happening, just a little bit, though. I think it was probably like the, it's like something about like, right. when you stand up, like your pelvic floor muscles do something different than when you're just like laying down or sitting. It's like the pressure on them, I think, was what was causing it, because it was obviously pushing mm-hmm. for 5 hours. My pelvic floor is weak. Very weak. So
right.
Yeah.
Well, and having a baby just period, like,
yeah,
will do a number to you.
Potty training myself as like a 28-year-old woman basically is what it was like. Yeah, it came to a point where I'm
it's
like
a good way to look at it.
I'm so sick of these crappy hospital pad things. Can you give me an adult diaper? Like, I was just asking and begging, can I just have an adult diaper? Because I hate standing up and getting pee everywhere. So it took them a couple days to locate them, because they don't keep those on the L&D floor. So they had to go find them in like a weird closet somewhere in the hospital. So it took like a day or two for them to be able to find those. But
yeah.
Oh my goodness. So, but that whole issue of my bladder lasted for about a month. So it did get better over time, and I was able to kind of extend the time that I went to the bathroom. But yeah, it was a process to like learn all that again and get my pelvic floor strong enough. So, and I think walking probably also helped with that too. Probably. So they came every morning and they drew my blood and they x-rayed my chest with like this portable x-ray machine. It was really weird. And every time they'd lay like the, there was like some sort of board that they laid on me so like it would prevent some sort of radiation or whatever. That was painful whenever they'd rest it on me, because it was resting on my very sensitive abdomen. And I think they were checking for pneumonia, but I'm not sure, because it was so hard to like, to even get like mucus or anything up from my lungs. But they were like, kept telling me, you need to make sure you're getting some mucus up. And because of the C-section and the hysterectomy, it hurt to cough. So I'm like so nervous to get any mucus up, but I'm also not wanting to get pneumonia and all these things. So they would check my chest on that every morning. Just, and maybe it was also just to check how my ribs were after the CPR. I don't know the exact reasons, but it happened every morning. So anyway, we passed a lot of time in our hospital room watching The Office on my laptop, which I'm so glad that we had packed that, because I wish that our hospital, that hospital had had like Netflix or Hulu, but it didn't. I really think that if that's not a thing nationwide, they should definitely implement Netflix and Hulu into their hospital TVs. Because who watches regular TV anymore?
yes.
So we watched the news, though. And I heard exactly. that we were talking about all the cruise ships and stuff being quarantined because of this weird virus that was originating mm-hmm. from China. And, oh, there's no reason to worry about it. Everything's fine. So we would just basically watch The Office, watch the news, and talk about what life would be like when we finally got to leave the hospital. So after 9 days in the hospital, I just like couldn't take it anymore. It just felt like we were never gonna leave. And so I broke down and I cried in frustration, which was my first time crying since being in the hospital, by the way, for those 9 days. Because I just felt like there was no end in sight, like I said. So I don't know why I didn't cry before then, but I really do think it was probably because of the pure shock of it, of everything that had happened. And I think it was probably starting to wear off at that point. So I just was so sick of it. I wanted to go home. And then that same night, though, one of the doctors that assisted on my hysterectomy, she came and told me that my blood levels were looking a lot better. It still wasn't too good, but they were looking really good. and that they'd want to see it good in the morning in order to let me go home. So I was just like broke down in happy tears because I was so happy to see that we could most likely go home in the morning. So I remember giving her a hug and I was like, I know that I smell really bad, but can I give you a hug? Because no matter how much you shower in a hospital, the water pressure sucks. It's not your shower. You don't have all of your products that you use in a shower. So it's just not the same. And so I still felt gross, even though I was showering like every other day. And so I just gave her a hug and I was like crying. I'm like, thank you. You saved my life. You know, and she was crying too. And I just wanted her to feel appreciated. So I like gave her this really nice hug, even though it was stinky. So the next morning they took my blood, and by 12:30 that afternoon the three of us were on our way home. And so that was a total of 10 days in the hospital, starting from when we went to see what was going on with my blood pressure on the 19th to the 29th when I got to go home. So they released me, and so I actually had to go home, which I'd had this the whole time I was in the hospital, but I had to go home with a surgical drain bulb that they had put in me after my hysterectomy. And so I don't know if the listeners really know what that is or if what you know what that is, but it's basically like this tube that comes out, and it comes, and there's like this little, I don't know a good way to describe it, but I would say, not that I really know, but it's just like a small little bulb, I guess. And it's just fluid that collects from a surgical site, just excess fluid, because they don't want that all sitting in there. So it just kind of drains into this little collection thing. And so I had to go home with that. Oh my gosh. And I hated showering with that thing because it's hanging out of me, but you don't want it to have too much. You don't want it to have too much gravity effect on it, because then it could just like fall out. So, but I mean, they do have it kind of coiled and wrapped around inside of you pretty good, but they do tell you to not like just toss it around. They want you to be really careful with it. So showering sucked with that, because I kind of had to be really cautious about soaps and everything in that little area. Because you don't want it to, like, the soaps and stuff to get inside. So I had to still shower with that. Mm-hmm. And I had to use that for another 2 weeks after we got home. 2 or 3 weeks, I think. So I finally got to get that out. And then showering was easy. Though I still wasn't at 6 weeks where I could take a bath. And I love baths. They are my treat at the end of the day. I cannot end a day without taking a bath. It just relaxes me like nothing else will. So but in the early weeks of being postpartum, after we were home, I really prioritized my hygiene, because it was one of the things that I could control. And then, you know, after being in the hospital, where I felt like I had the worst hygiene, even though I was taking care of what I could, I just made sure I was prioritizing that, because I hated feeling grimy and dirty. So, yeah, but it was one of the things that I could control when everything else felt chaotic with a newborn. And so those 12 weeks, not including any of like the recovery, I say that those 12 weeks were the happiest state of chaos, which everyone says, yeah, that's a really good way to describe life with a newborn. So it's, yeah. So I'm like, I think regardless of,
I have to agree,
my whole situation, newborn life is pretty chaotic. There's no schedule or anything. And I'm pretty type A. So I love schedules. And so him not being on one was like, this is so chaotic. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I'm stressed out over this. Unnecessarily stressed, because there's nothing you can do to put a newborn on a schedule. So so I was so excited for the day
that
I could sleep in my bed comfortably, but that wasn't until I was like 4.5 months postpartum. So up until that point, I was sleeping in a recliner, which was a little bit more comfortable than hospital bed, but yeah. still wasn't my bed. So when I was about 4 months postpartum, I started experimenting with sleeping in my bed, but you know, the physical therapist in the hospital, they had shown me like how to get in and out of bed was like this log roll technique, but I still felt my abs with that so much that it was still like, it did not even feel like an option. So like in the hospital, when I would be like laying in bed, the only way that I could really get out of bed was to raise the back enough to where I could just do a quick little turn off to the side and just immediately stand up. Like there was no way that I was getting from a fully horizontal position to a vertical. There was just no way. So, and then the more time went on, the more normal I started feeling. And then by 6 weeks, I was surprised at how well I was feeling. I was feeling pretty great, enough to where I could do some really gentle exercising, just very, very gentle. And then, you know, the postpartum and newborn fog had started to clear by the time I was like, obviously the 12 weeks, and I was feeling a lot better. But my husband, he had tons of sick leave saved up from the 4 years that he'd been working at his job. So he was able to take 8 weeks off of paid leave. And I know that that's just like unheard of, but he has like no sick leave now, so he can't like be sick anymore. But he had that much paid leave for sick, and he was able to take it, obviously, to take care of me and Mason. So that really did take off some of the pressure to recover, because I didn't feel like I needed to hurry and recover before he had to go back to work in 2 weeks or whatever. So it was really a blessing that he was able to take that much time off. And so, yeah, by the time Mason was about 4.5 months, when I could get sleep in my own bed and everything, I felt fully recovered. And there still are moments though where I'm like, oh man, I still feel like some sensitivity in my abs. So, but that's kind of normal and will be for the next little bit as we go on. But yeah, now Mason is 9 months and I'm 9 months postpartum and he's a busy little bee. And you know, that's basically our story. And I'm just so grateful to, you know, family and friends, and they helped us out so much, whether that was taking care of our dog while the whole time we were in the hospital, which they had only anticipated it being like a couple days and it ended up being like 10. So that was amazing. My mom and my grandma, they came over to clean our house and I was super stubborn about it. I insisted on at least like folding some laundry. Because I wanted laundry folded the way that we fold it. Like, I'm very particular about that. But yeah, it's a miracle that Mason lived and that I lived. And I just, you know, feel indebted to modern medicine. And that's our story, as rough and crazy as it is.
Well, holy smokes. Yeah, like I said, that was quite the roller coaster.
Yeah.
For sure. I have a question about, so what did they have to do for him? And I know you said you don't have a lot of recollection of like him in the NICU and stuff, but what did they do for him while he was there? Like, did he aspirate or
give birth for him? I don't know if he aspirated or what, or if it was the stress. I don't know, but I do know that he was hooked up to oxygen for the whole time he was in the NICU until he was just breathing room air. And that's when they released him. So I don't really know. And I really should ask on that, because I don't know. And all my family and friends know that I'm doing this podcast, so I'm sure my mom will tell me when she listens to it, because she knows more about it than I do. But I was 6 weeks postpartum because I'm like, hey, I know this isn't standard, but because of what happened, I'd like to see that my blood is okay. Mm-hmm. Like everything's fine. I don't have any deficiencies or whatever, because they told me that I would have an iron deficiency and be anemic most likely. So they had given me an iron pill and I took one of those and I was like, oh, I feel so terrible and awful and nauseous and sick. So I told my doctor and she's like, well, you can just don't take it. And then when you're 6 weeks, we can check your levels. So that you're not anemic, you're fine. So I'm like, oh, well, that's surprising.
Well, Alex, I want to say once again, I appreciate you reaching out and coming on and sharing your story. I know that it was very important to you to be able to share it start to finish. And I hope that you found it therapeutic and healing. I also want to let you know that I will be praying for you in your future endeavors, whether it's adoption or IVF or just wherever on that front that your heart leads you. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Hey y'all, that's all the time we have for this episode, but be sure to catch up on all of our episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you or someone you know are interested in being a guest on our show, find us on Instagram at From Bumps to Birth, or you can message me, Ricky Hamley, on Facebook. Thank you so much for your support and listening, and until next time, I am your host, Ricky Hamley.